Welcome to the latest episode of the IDEA podcast from the Irish Development Education Association. I'm your host, Eimear Green, and on today's episode, I'm chatting with Matt Bailey-Smith, who is a professor at Northumbria University. Matt is an interdisciplinary global development academic whose research focuses on the relationships between civil society, citizenship, and development in the Global South. His current work explores volunteering in humanitarian and development settings and young people as development actors. I hope you enjoy. Matt, thanks for coming.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to be here.
Would you like to start off by telling us a bit about your background and the work that you do?
Sure, yeah. So my background is kind of mixed. I did a PhD on development education, and then I left academia and became a development education practitioner working for an NGO for a couple of years. And then I guess I became frustrated in that moment that I didn't feel we had the kind of knowledge and evidence and background to kind of inform what I was doing. So I decided to return to academia. And since then, I've really been working on kind of education, citizenship, civil society and NGOs. And then more recently, a lot of research on different kinds of different forms of volunteering. But I suppose the defining kind of element of all that for me is that I like to work in partnership with different development actors and different development organizations. They might be NGOs. They could be international NGOs. It could be kind of local NGOs in the South. I like working with kind of international humanitarian and development actors. And for me, that kind of is almost as much the defining part of my kind of trajectory as it is about the substantive content. And obviously, I'm very interested in the kind of intellectual content of it, but I'm interested in trying to finding ways of kind of working across the kind of practitioner academic divide and the kinds of conversations you need to have to make that work. And for me, they're always kind of exciting learning processes. So I enjoy doing it as well as thinking it's the most productive way of doing stuff.
Okay, great. So you worked in many different types of partnerships there, as you were saying. Can you talk a bit about those and what for you were the elements that defined them?
Hey, so in a way, that's a really challenging question, because I think there's something interesting. I was reflecting on this a little bit before our conversation and thinking that partnerships become such a kind of loaded term, hasn't it, within the sector? Mm-hmm. And so kind of some things we call partnerships. They're like, this is a partnership, right? And so I was thinking at first about those kinds of partnerships. And then I was thinking, but actually there are kind of multiple forms of partnership in almost all the work that I do. And some of those partnerships are partnerships with fellow academics where we're writing together, or actually sometimes it's a partnership where you're almost kind of like a mentor and a support to each other. And it isn't about delivering a project, it's about kind of, you know, like a kind of partner in kind of crime. You know, you're kind of working mm-hmm. together to a kind of shared mission without necessarily doing the same thing together. And it's about having a shared understanding of kind of maybe your colleague's way of thinking and working and wanting to be alongside them. So there's all those kinds of informal partnerships that I think have been really, really important. And I think they're very important and we don't talk about them very much. And then you've got things where you kind of name them as a partnership and sometimes they just evolve. And I think over time you kind of build up that kind of relationship through, you know, just coming to a kind of shared understanding of something, and then that evolves into actually thinking we could deliver something together here together. And sometimes you have that thing of, you know, we want to form a partnership because we can already see a kind of thing, or we need to form a partnership to kind of deliver on a goal or an objective. So I think, you know, across all those partnerships, there's lots of different things going on, if you know what I mean. And I think for me, And this may be a very personal thing, but actually a defining thing for me, and I have a kind of, you know, my test for a lot of my partnerships I have is about, can I sit down and have a cup of tea with them? Will they kind of mm-hmm. listen to me if I'm having a bad time or I'm stressed or I'm finding something difficult? If someone won't do that or can't do that or is not the sort of person I can make a connection with, fundamentally, I find it quite hard to think, how's this partnership going to work? Because that's kind of those kind of processes are what you build trust through. Mm-hmm. And I think without that, it's very, very hard to kind of co-develop an agenda, right? And to yeah. think of something you're doing as being joint.
Okay, and you've touched on a couple of things there. But as we all know, partnerships can be complicated. Are there any aspects in particular that can be tricky to navigate and could ultimately affect the success of the partnership?
I think there are things that are really complicated and difficult. I think one of the things I've been reflecting on a lot quite recently is how honest you need to be and kind of how much you need to share. If you're developing a partnership, I can think of an example, actually. So the partnership that's the heart of a great project I'm doing at the moment on volunteers in conflict and emergencies, and it's a partnership between myself and some of my colleagues and the Swedish Red Cross and then various national societies within the Red Cross movement. And actually, the challenge in that kind of thing, to some extent, is about how much we understand about each other's worlds. So if it's an academic to an academic partnership, actually, we're often working in very similar spheres. That isn't always the case if it's a partnership between Global North and Global South. But if I'm working with another British academic, for example, you know, within my field, then we kind of know where we're coming from. If it's someone in a different discipline, we need to do a bit more work, because what counts as producing something or what counts as research is a little bit different for them to me. If you then have a partnership between an academic and, say, a humanitarian organization or a civil society organization, the kind of timelines they have to work to are different. What counts as success for them is different. What counts as kind of ethical ways of behaving between the two of you might be different. And if you don't clear that stuff early on, I think what happens is later on, when you get to the kind of hard end of, say, delivering some stuff together, it doesn't work, because you don't have a shared understanding of what each of you might be doing to negotiate your kind of own little economy that you're stuck in and trying to marrying it up to the other person's economy of things they have to deliver. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it is about how do you kind of open that conversation by explaining the kind of constraints and the opportunities and the challenges across those two partners, so that you can then give yourselves time to see how they connect, right? And for me, I think actually the biggest thing is time. And what's been really rich about the Conflicts and Emergencies Initiative and is the bravery of the Swedish Red Cross of kind of allowing time, giving us time to try and work through how do we kind of create these synergies as we go along, as we learn about each other, how do we refine the process so that it's not a challenge for both partners.
Mm-hmm. Are there any maybe tips or advice that you might have for our members and or anyone listening to this podcast, you know, when they're going into a partnership or on how to approach a partnership?
It's a really good question. I think one of the things early on is not to be affronted or upset if something comes out that you feel is kind of a challenge to your way of working, because mm-hmm. it may just be an expression of their way of working. And, you know, it might feel like, well, my timeline and agenda was this, and now they're contradicting it. Not necessarily. They'll have a timeline and agenda and a requirement to report in a way that may be different. So sometimes those kinds of moments are actually, I suppose, a prompt to have that conversation. So is now the moment to kind of, oh, that's interesting. You've got to do this. Can I just say, these are what I've got to do? And I'm not trying to challenge you about what you've got to do, but I've got to do this. So can we configure things to be a little bit clever so that we're supporting each other? And that's the real success, right? Is where you create a package of activities and collaborations where you simultaneously deliver on these quite different objectives. So I think for me, there's that kind of conversation really, really early on. And I think the other thing is about how do you build trust and how do you give time for trust to evolve? And what are the things you could do to help explore trust for each other so that when a project gets sticky, it makes such a huge difference knowing that even if it's a bit sticky and you're feeling a bit alone in something that you're worrying is not going well, knowing that your other partner knows who you are and they've got your back is brilliant. But you don't just get that immediately. And that takes time, and that's an investment in resources and investments in lots of different ways. But I think it inevitably kind of delivers, both in terms of project delivery for working on a project, but also actually in terms of the well-being of everyone involved in something.
So it sounds very much like maybe the two core things there are communication and time, yeah. Investment of time.
Yeah, I think it is about that. And the communication's two-way and it involves a kind of negotiation and a back and forth, and that itself can take time, because the languages each of you use to describe the things you're trying to do might be really, really different. So when some person say, well, we need an outcome or an output. Mm-hmm. For an academic, that might mean one thing. For an NGO, it might mean something else. What does it mean to monitor and evaluate? Who, you know, all these languages, we think we have a shared language around them. Sometimes they are, not always. And it's just worth, I suppose, at the start, pushing around the edges a little bit, just to going, okay, let's just make sure we've got a shared space here. We're not doing the same things, but let's make sure we create something, some sort of shared space where we can kind of productively work together without it being unbearably stressful and kind of creating all these sort of tensions and difficulties.
Yeah, some really, really useful advice there. And just one final question. Why do you think that working in partnership is valuable, ultimately?
Gosh, that's the sort of question, doesn't it? It prompts you to reflect on your entire career and think, why did I decide that was a good thing? I think, from a really personal point of view, I'll answer this very much from me, as, you know, not necessarily in my kind of professional identity particularly, but it's just how I like working. And I think some people really thrive on collaborative ways of working and really thrive on dialogue and engagement and kind of a people, you know, and, mm-hmm. and for me, that's why partnership is great. I have my ideas by kind of talking with and exploring with someone else who might kind of, you know, not come from the same space as me. So it forces me to kind of translate what I'm saying and them to kind of go, really? And translate it back, you know. So those kind of academic civil society partnerships are incredibly valuable because I think we kind of pull each other and push each other in a really nice way. So I think for me, that's really, really important. I also think, if we're really honest, that, you know, there are the scale of challenges facing all sorts of different communities across the world in terms of kind of persistent, you know, extreme poverty, people's, you know, rights being neglected, the ways in which power is kind of distributed means you simply can't tackle these things on your own. It's just not viable. You need lots of voices around the table and you need lots of different sources of power and influence and change. And so in a really instrumental way, if you don't do that, those things are not going to change.
Food for thought there. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt.
You're welcome. It's been a really enjoyable chat. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check out our website for more. Until the next time.